This week on RSVMB Update, Tier 92 Elite Tectonic and Serenic Armor is finally viable for PVM use. We also break down the latest from the Player Advocacy Group and discuss PAG versus game design. Finally, we detail the Tetra Compass method of archaeology trading. This is RSVMB Update, episode 784, recorded Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. Crouching Ninja Hidden PAG. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. This week, of course, Ninja Strike number 7 greets us. This one, of course, has a heavy PVM focus, but that is, of course, putting the cart before the horse. This is your usual weekly episode of RSVNB Update. I am Shane12088. Tannis, you're here as you are each and every week.
That's right.
Tannis79. Yep. And David is also joining us because of the, quite frankly, immense amount of PVM content that I have no idea of what the impact is, so hopefully you can provide some insight on that.
Yep. Good to be back again.
And he is named Cabru in-game, and if you want to learn more about David, check out our Patreon feature for the month, which we'll talk a little bit about later. Alrighty, so Ninja Strike number 7, Tier 92 Armor. Let's dive straight into this one. You know, this is an interesting one, because I remember when each of these armors came out, the Tectonic, Malevolent, and Serenic armor. The main ones that are being focused this week are the Tectonic and Serenic. And, you know, with these, I remember us having this discussion when they came out, because one of them came out with one of the Elite Dungeons, right? Which one of these came out with the first Elite Dungeon? That was the Serenic, right? I think.
Yep.
That is right.
Serenic. Yep. Elite Dungeon 1.
And then where did Tectonic come from?
The Elite Tectonic is from Elite Dungeon 2. No. Yeah. So Serenic comes from Serenic Scales. Tectonic is from Virago. And then Elite Serenic is Elite Dungeon 1. And Elite Tectonic is Elite Dungeon 2.
All right.
You basically add items from the Elite Dungeons,
right,
to the original Tier 90 armor.
And our Tier 92 and our Tier 92 melee armor is the Masterwork.
Right. So
okay.
So it Malevolent, there's no Tier 92 version of Malevolent, because
right,
our Tier 92 melee armor comes from smithing.
But it comes from Chrysalis essence.
Yeah, and Malevolent,
right,
and Malevolent on its own at Tier 90 comes from Rise of the Six, right?
Yep.
All right. Good. I knew that. And so before this update, did you use the Serenic and Tectonic armor at all that much?
I have a set of Elite Tectonic armor that I was only using exclusively for Elite Dungeons, because it doesn't use any charge in Elite Dungeons. But until this update, I didn't use it a single time outside of Elite Dungeons, because I think it was around 15 mil an hour to use Elite Tectonic. So I did not find that to be worth it.
Yeah, let's let that sink in when you combine it with everything else that you're going to be looking at then on the price side, which is absolutely astounding for a piece of armor. So,
Yeah.
What about the Tectonic? Did you ever use that one?
Yeah, I use Tectonic everywhere. So I have two sets of magic armor. I have a set of Tectonic and a set of Elite Tectonic. Soon I will only have Elite Tectonic. I'm going to go have someone kill me in the red portal for the Tectonic so I get my energies back. I just have to use an equipment separator. Yeah, I need two equipment separators so I could take my perks off my Tectonic and put it on my Elite Tectonic.
All right.
But once I get that done, I'll never use Tectonic again. I'll only use Elite.
So the update this week is that you can now create a repair patch, which will partially repair these Tier 92 Elite Armors, the Serenic and Tectonic. And the way it works with the repair patches is that you'll need 2 repair patches to repair a helmet, 6 to repair a body, and 4 to repair the leg pieces. And the Serenic repair patch is made of 7 ancient scales, 1 Serenic scale, 2 Winterwold wool, and 2 Blackstone hearts, whereas the Elite Tectonic Repair Patch is 7 Draconic Energy, 1 Tectonic Energy, 2 Summer Down Wool, and 2 Blackstone Hearts. So, you know, pretty easy to get the Summer Down Wool side of it and the Blackstone Hearts. How do you feel about the other components here of Ancient Scales and Draconic Scales?
Where do those come from?
Those are the Elite Dungeon.
Yeah, those are the Elite Dungeon.
So Elite Dungeon, Ancient Skills is Elite Dungeon 1, and Draconic Energy is Elite Dungeon 2. They have to include it, because if they didn't include those in the repair patches, over time they would just crash to nothing.
Yeah,
and once you make the initial armor, you would never need it again. So it had to be a component.
And this is an interesting thing, because it of course keeps people coming back to those elite dungeons.
Right.
Now, how do you feel this would be for the costs of repair compared to what we had previously?
Well, the elite versions of the armor are obviously a huge upfront cost compared to the regular. So yeah. Cyrenic, for example, regular Cyrenic is what, like maybe 75 mil, and then the elite version is maybe 700 mil. Bike prices are changing and stuff. But it's a somewhat expensive upfront cost, but over time, the repair is now really, really, really cheap compared to what it used to be. Like, instead of having to get a whole new set of Cyrenic armor every time, you just get these repair patches, pop them on, and you're good to go.
Yeah, because how it used to work is the elite armor would just eat a piece of the regular Cyrenic armor, right? Or Tectonic.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you think about it, you compare, say, a piece of Tectonic or Cyrenic armor to this section of repair costs, it's actually really, really cheap on that front. And, I mean, I guess that's good because, like you said, you really only use this in specific cases before, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was not willing to pay 15 mil an hour for a DPS upgrade of like 0.02%.
Right. And now will you use these more often?
Yeah, I'll use them everywhere because I already own them, so I don't need to pay the upfront costs.
Yeah.
And so it'll just be way cheaper to repair.
And Tectonic Energy and the Cyrenic Scales are easy to get. Blackstone Hearts are easy to get.
Yeah, Tectonic Energy is like 1.1 mil each. Cyrenic Scales are around 500k each.
So, yeah, and
not too bad.
And we all have, you know, Blackstone Hearts from the Shadow Reef, of course. So,
yeah,
I got a bunch of those on our run through it. Now, furthermore, if each armor piece is augmented, each repair patch will require 6 divine charges as well. So, what you're looking at potentially is that you're looking at 36 divine charges if your body piece is augmented, 12 for a helmet, and 24 for the leg set for divine charges as well. Which, yep. I mean, it's always nice to see extra sinks for the divine charges because we all know how good of a moneymaker that is in this point.
Yeah, Incandescent energy has been weird. I've been flipping a lot, so and one of the items I do is incandescent. And the market's been weird, but they're way up now. They were like, well, they're back to where their normal price is, basically.
Yeah, and
they crashed a lot.
And, you know, my theory on that is that, of course, they crashed because when people came in and got 98 archaeology, there was a huge influx of that incandescent energy because everybody was using the energy, of course, to make porters for their archaeology training. So that was your initial spike of demand. Then when more people got 98 archaeology in the relic, the amount of energy increased in the market. And now this is another sink for that energy and divine charges in this case, kind of restoring it to balance of where it was previously. I actually just want to kind of jump forward one thing on this. They said for the player advocacy group in the live stream this week that these changes that they brought in were accelerated by the player advocacy group. They were thinking of doing something on this, but this is something, one of the areas that the player advocacy group did highlight as was needing changes in the game and brought it forward. And they underscored that it people on the player advocacy group have no insight into when updates are going to happen or what the implementation was going to be. So they would have suggested, the player advocacy group would have suggested, we need a fix to Tier 92 Elite Serenic Armor and Elite Tectonic Armor to make it so that it doesn't cost as much to use. And then this would have been the solution that the Ninja team and the balancing team would have come up with on that front. And we'll talk more about the player advocacy group later on that. Let's see. Continuing on this, following these repair changes, the creation of Tier 92 Elite Armors now also includes Praeselect Essences similar to those required for the Masterwork. And the Praeselect Essences have been split into three categories for both melee, ranged, and magic. 10 Praeselect Essence will be required for a full set of Serenic, which is the ranged version. 10 Praeselect Essence Magic will be required for the Tectonic. And these Praeselect Essences can be acquired by, of course, breaking down the Pernix, Virtus, and Torva gear at the Dragonkin Forge for the ranged magic and melee, respectively, which is, of course, one thing that we looked into when creating our Masterwork armor back in the day. It's also now possible to upgrade an augmented Tier 90 Serenic and Tectonic armor to Tier 92 as long as they're at 95% degradation or above. So what this tells me is that if you accidentally go out there and use this and you equip it and you take it down a couple of percentage points, you can just hold it in your bank and then say, yep, upgrade at this point. So you don't need to, you know, go buy a whole new set.
Yeah, I know that on release of Masterwork, I think I told this story on the show before, maybe, or maybe I didn't.
I think I know which one you're going to tell, but go for it.
Yeah, so I bought full Masterwork, put it on so I could get it custom fit. And when I go to Falador to the Artisan's Workshop, because I'm obsessed with efficiency, I always barge one of the guards because it helps you get there faster. You know, you like surge, bladed dive, barge into a guard. And then when I went to get it custom fit, they said, no, 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 your armor is not at 100%, so no custom fit for you. And it was at 99.9 because I had barged the guard. And I was so mad that I went and bought a brand new set from the Grand Exchange. And so now I have a second set sitting in my bank. Now, of course, 1 week later, because there were so many complaints on Reddit about people like me doing this, they changed it to be similar to this, where if it was above 95%, you were still, you know, good to go. But I just dumped like 400 million on buying a second set because I was so mad.
Yeah, and you know, it took until this point to get the same kind of thing for Serenic and Tectonic. So
yeah.
To upgrade the augmented armors, right click or long press on the ancient scales or draconic energy and just use them on the armor. Nice. How did you feel about the initial Tier 92 Elite armors when they came out, creating them, like the process for that? I don't know if we had you on for that one.
I mean, I don't know. It made sense at the time, sort of. Like I said, I did make a set, and I've only used that set in Elite Dungeons.
Yeah.
But from the very beginning, it was very obvious that unless you just did not care whatsoever about money, that these armors were like borderline useless because they were just such a high cost for such a minute upgrade. I mean, the thing that the player advocacy group, because I know some people who are in it, everyone just wanted there to be a big set effect so that it would be worth it to spend tons of money because there was a good set effect. So like Masterwork, for example, the trimmed version has that incredible set effect. And so that's why there's a clear difference. But in terms of damage, the difference between Tier 90 and Tier 92 is so insignificant that you basically can't tell. And so there was just zero reason to ever use it. The only exception being if you're going to do tons of Elite Dungeons, then not having a charge cost was pretty sweet. But yeah, outside of there, it was pretty unusable. And now it's much more usable, which is nice. It only took, 2 years?
Yeah. So now the million-dollar question, you know, for somebody who's, you know, just doing Slayer or, you know, doing, I'm going to say basic bosses like the Queen Black Dragon or Araxor, Tier 90 armor is good enough, or should that person, if they have the money, make the investment in tier 92 now?
Well, you ask kind of two different questions. For Araxor, if you're planning on doing many, like, say, many hundreds or even thousands of Araxor kills, sure. Yeah, sure, get the tier 92, because over a long time, even though the damage isn't different, you'll end up saving money just because of repair costs. If you're just doing Slayer, you just shouldn't use degradable armor at all. You should be using like Subjugation or at most the God Wars Ascension 2 armor, like the Anima Core of Saren, Anima Core of Zamorak, etc. The only places you should be using tier 90 or tier 92 armor for magic or ranged. Masterwork's different because it doesn't degrade on Slayer tasks. But for magic and range, the only places you should use tier 90 or tier 92 are like the very high end things, like Araxor or harder, I would say. Like Araxor Nex would be kind of the minimum.
All right, fair enough. And even then, I mean, I guess you could structure your Araxor kills to go on a phase where you could just do it with Masterwork, right? Because that's an option too, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah. I mean, most people, I would say Melee is definitely the most popular Araxor style, and Masterwork is definitely really, really nice there. It saves your life too.
Because of the nice little special effect.
Right. But you definitely, it's definitely not necessary. I mean, I did on my Iron Man, I did my first 150 or so Araxor kills in War Priest armor. So.
I remember you telling me about that, and that's the tier 75 hybrid armor. So it's not even, it doesn't even have the armor value of tier 75. It's something in the mid 60s, which says a lot to your ability. Degrade to dust armors at tier 90 and tier 92 will now drop the correct amount of their primary ingredient relative to the charge remaining when you're killed in the wilderness. You were mentioning you were going to do this with one of your extra sets. Eventually, you take the augments.
Once I remove my perks, because my perks on there are obscenely expensive, once I get my perks taken off with a separator, I'm going to have someone kill me, so I get a little bit of money out of it.
Yeah, you get your materials back, so to speak. They also added a tooltip to these elite armors explaining their set effect, which negates the degradation in elite dungeons. When you repair the armors, the degradation state is now shown at 2 decimal points for accuracy. I don't know. Was that an issue before, having only 1 decimal point?
My assumption on this is that the difference between tier 90 and tier 92 is so insignificant that in order to see it, you need a second decimal point.
Oh, for the degradation state.
Oh, it's for the degradation state?
It's for the degradation state, yeah.
Oh, I see. I don't know why they needed to do that.
All right. Messaging.
I would say who cares. All right.
Messaging when attempting to use an augmenter on degrade to dust armors is now more descriptive. Using a repair patch on the fully charged but previously worn tier 92 armor piece can overcharge them back to a new tradable state.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
I missed that one when I did my first run through on the patch notes earlier this week. And I mean, I guess this is just a way, kind of a bit of a shortcut for anybody who, just kind of wants to buy the armor and not go through the whole rigmarole of creating it. Early pricing on this gives the, let me just check the GE prices on this. It gives the entire Elite Serenic set a price of 566 million GP. GE price. And I don't know how close that is to what it would actually be, but that's what the suggested GE prices are this week for
it's
Elite Serenic.
I can tell you what it's currently going for. So the mask is currently going for, it says the, I mean, it's a huge range because I think that it's just all over the place, but it says between 150 and 265.
Okay. So that's beyond the suggested GE prices then.
Yeah. The top is currently being traded between 360 and 475.
Are you using that new community aggregated GE bot price checker thing?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. You know, I think they're going to have to kind of cave to community pressure at some point and add some kind of, hey, this is the ranges these things are trading at. Because, I mean, it was only fair to people in-game, I think, because not everybody has access to one of these Discord bots.
Yeah, it's currently trading between 700 and 800.
All right, what do we got for the set? For the Tectonic? The GE price for a set of Tectonics is 309.3, but I'd imagine it's higher than that.
It is currently trading at between, 340 and 500.
Wow.
For the whole set.
Well, that's not completely out of my price range. I don't know about you, Tanis.
Well, that's not my price range.
Okay. And I mean, like he said, we would only need this if we were heavily, heavily PVMing. But interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely worth, like, if you're going to do, say you're going to do like 1,000 hours of PVM over the next 2 years. Like, I don't know how much PVM anyone does, but like, just throw that out there randomly. You could probably calculate how much money it would save you over the long haul to invest in Elite versus continue to use tier 90. But I would say for people who have always been on the fence about investing in best in slot gear, if you think you're going to use it just a ton, then it's definitely worth it. If you PVM once a week or a couple times a month, then no chance, not worth it at all.
Yeah.
'Cause it'll be 15 years before you get your value out of it.
Yeah, and the only reason I bought a scythe back in the day was because it's non-degradable, so.
Yeah, I mean, non-degradable stuff is always good. I mean, it goes down over time, obviously, because of supply and demand, but it's non-degradable stuff is always a good investment for the most part.
When making tier 90 or tier 92 ranged or magic armor, the make X screen will now default to a quantity of 1 to avoid accidentally making too many copies of 1 equipment piece.
Yeah, that's so annoying. That's always been obnoxious.
Everything else make X defaults to the maximum because it assumes that's what you want, but not in this case.
Right. Yeah, you end up with like 7 helms on your Iron Man.
You don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very upsetting. I accidentally made 2 Tectonic helms on my Iron Man, and I was very upset.
Oh my god!
I mean, it's fine. It like,
I mean,
it's,
yeah, it's you'll use it, but it's kind of it is upsetting.
Yeah, it's just obnoxious. That's all.
Fix various inconsistencies when using tier 90 or tier 92 ingredients on each other. All of them should now prompt a make X interface if they are used to create the same item. And that's the patch notes for Ninja Strike 7 on Tier 92 Elite Serenic and Tectonic Armor. I think the biggest thing out of this is probably the repair patches and the fact that you can just buy them now outright. Would you agree with that? Or is there any of these other things that we've gone through that you feel is
totally
very powerful?
But a secondary effect of this is like Nex is just bonkers money now. Like, because for a while, a lot of the Nex drops were pretty bad, like the Virtus and Pernix gloves and boots and helms and whatnot. And now, Torva was, of course, huge. Like, Torva was more than double the price of Pernix and Virtus because it was actually used for something. Now, Pernix and Virtus is just up just a ton. Which is nice. Like, those, a lot of, basically just like, every single Nex drop now is really, really good. So, for anyone who was thinking about getting into Nex, there's never been a better time. That boss might be the best GP in the game outside of like the highest levels of Telos.
Yeah, because I remember when we were talking about where I would take my group next after God Wars 2, we haven't gone recently, but you actually said Nex, and I imagine that would make even more sense now for about a group of 4 or 5 or so.
Yeah, totally, because now when you get a drop, instead of there being a because, you know, it's 1 in 18 to roll one of the Nex custom, what do you call one of the Nex rares, I guess?
Yeah.
And about a third of them were under 5 mil before this update. And now I think they'll creep up to basically, I think the lowest drop in necks in a couple months will be like 15 mil.
Nice. Nice. And I mean, I think you can see this much as an accessibility update for the armors as you can as a lever on the economy, which is good. I have no complaints about this. I was a little bit concerned about how all this would shake out reading this week, but based on our discussion here, I think this is actually a really, really solid change.
I wish they'd given it a set effect, even if it was a small set effect.
Yeah.
Like that would have been, to me, that would have been really nice. Mm. That would have caused a temporary price spike, but I just love that they gave Masterwork or Trend Masterwork its own little thing. And I'm not saying that it would have had to be as good as Trend Masterwork, because that's like pushing the boundary of being almost too good. But it would have been nice if they did something.
The
extended Sunshine and Death Swiftness timer that was being discussed might have been too strong. But I think it was weird, because do you remember that when they said that they were going to give it set effects?
Yeah. And I remember that Death Swiftness talk, because my concern if they did that for the Death Swiftness ability is that kind of pigeonholes you into a situation where that's an ultimate ability that you're designing the set effect around, which you might not want to do.
Yeah. Well, plus it kind of forces you to buy that armor, because basically what they did was they finally said, fine, we'll give it a set effect. And then the set effect they suggested was so unbelievably powerful that there was massive backlash against it. And then they just gave up. Like, instead of saying, well, maybe we could find a compromise where there's a set effect, but it's not too good, they just gave up on the idea of a set effect entirely, which was a little sad to see, because I think bonuses are fun.
And another way I look at it is that your set effect for Masterwork is there because it is a player-made armor that was designed to be the best-in-class melee armor made from the mining and smithing rework. So it deserved that set effect and that. From that standpoint, at least that's the way I see the reason it got that little extra one. And you know, that one that it got of being able to split incoming damage that you get and split it into a damage over time is just immaculate, because you know, you're looking at people who are making this power armor, the Masterwork armor, and they are people who are making it through skilling primarily, so they might not have had that experience before with combat. So it's just a nice way of spreading all that damage around. So I can see why they just, you know, just went along and let Masterwork have its own little niche, I guess you could say, on that. So, all right.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else on this before you want to move on? Tanis, anything on this?
No. This is out of my skill level, really.
and pocketbook level, right?
Yeah, well, that's for sure. You do that, I'll be over there in my ports. Hey, guys. Don't hurt me.
Yeah, but ports is good enough for Slayer. It really is. All right.
Yeah, I agree.
Grand Exchange, further improvements. Unfavoriting a favorite item in the GE interface will no longer completely hide the favorites interface. In the Grand Exchange interface, the buy and sell text will no longer show on the slots that are unavailable in free to play. A plus limit button has been added to the quantity section of the buy offers on the Grand Exchange, and each press of this will add the 4-hour limit quantity to the current offer quantity.
I loved that update.
Okay,
that's so useful.
Okay.
It must be a Mercher update. I don't understand it.
Well,
yeah, I just made a Mercher alt, and it's made my life so much easier. Now instead of taking like 5 minutes to do my alt routine, it takes like 3 minutes. It's great.
See, I use this one when I buy seeds, when I buy herb seeds, because the limit's so low on those. But my problem with this one is that, you know, this was like, it was just something that was just thrown in. And if you look at the way the interface looks with this, it violates what we were talking about with Grand Exchange consistency within the existing user interface of the game. Sure, it works. It's a great accessibility feature for a bunch of people out there. But it looks horrible. And if you were really designing this with a UX user experience lens on from the very beginning, you would have brought this in the bulk of the grad exchange changes, and you would have completely changed the way the interface looked on that. I have a picture in my head of how that would look. I'm not going to go through that because, you know, it's out of the scope of these patch notes. But this patch note just annoyed me for that reason, because it felt like it was just the players saying, we need this, we need this. Jagex says, okay, here it is, without a thought of how it affects user experience and how the user interface flows. So I would have done it differently if this button was to be added.
I agree it's not aesthetically the best, but function-wise, it's great.
Yeah. All right. The Wicked Hood has had several improvements made this week that also affect the Rune Ethereal outfit for those who use that. I use this one whenever I get a Yak Track rune crafting task. The amount of teleport charges has been increased from 30 to 250, which, I mean, if you're doing soul runes at this point, charging a soul altar up, this is the item that you want to use.
Well, yeah. Wow.
Because, I mean, who doesn't have Wicked Hood token items laying about, right? From either Treasure Hunter or just getting them from the store.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, got some laying around.
The first option on the Wicked Hood can now be configured to either activate or previous teleport, which allows for teleportation via the action bar. I wasn't able to figure this one out, where it was. So
Wait, were you not able to figure out?
I wasn't able. It says that you can configure the Wicked Hood so that the left click option will either be activate or previous teleport. But I can't figure out how to configure this.
What do you get when you drop it in your action bar?
Whatever you set the option to
default.
Default is activate, but you can change it to previous teleport somehow. I don't know how.
That's a good question.
I'm going to maybe have a quick look on this in mobile while we go on. I don't know. David, do you have any?
I'm doing it. I'm testing it right now. All right.
Thank you. The previous teleport option now states which altar you'll be taken to. Withdrawing essences is now faster. I didn't notice any speed difference on here. Did you?
Yes. Really? Yes, I did. Yes. It's down by like a tick, I think.
Oh, okay. So one tick.
That's what it felt like to me. Don't quote me on it.
All right,
that's
fair enough. Fair enough. Info boxes have been added in various places for better and more descriptive messaging. And the Runecrafting Guild teleport is now more appropriately named on that front. So, there we have it. Were you able to find anything on that?
No, I'm not sure how that works either. That's kind of interesting. I wonder what you're supposed to do.
I don't know. Very, very interesting question. I'm just having a quick cruise through the actual in-game options because I didn't see that before. I mean, it wouldn't be under item drops or legacy or anything to that effect, or interfaces, mind you. UI customization? No. I don't know. That's something I'm going to have to look into further. Maybe one of the listeners out there knows what it is. And, you know, maybe it wasn't helping that I was on mobile at the time I was doing this and trying to figure out what this was, but I wasn't able to.
I figured it out.
Okay. What do you do?
Okay. So if you're wearing your Wicked Hood,
all right,
and then you teleport, say you teleport to the nature altar, and then you have it, and then you drag it to your interface, right? You can right click on the Wicked Hood on your interface, and there's a new button called configure. And so you click on configure, and then you say select the default interaction comes up, and you could either have it be activate or you could have it be previous teleport.
All right.
Then you could teleport just by hitting your
key. So wear the Wicked Hood, right?
Yes. So wear the Wicked Hood.
All right.
Now teleport to, you should be able to just do it without teleporting. So if you now, do you have the Wicked Hood on your action bar?
No.
Okay, you need to put
I see the configure option after wearing it now.
Yeah, you have to be wearing it. So if it's in your inventory, it does not work. You have to be wearing it is what it
is. So wear it and then right click or long press, configure, and it will.
Yeah, and then do you see the thing that pops up, either activate or previous teleport?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so that's how you do it.
All right. That makes sense.
I was gonna be sad if it didn't actually work because I was kind of excited about it.
Yeah, because I mean, when you bring something out like this, you definitely got to show it in that regard, and you know,
yeah,
that's good. And this is why we use the mobile client when we're recording because macOS's client isn't always reliable. All skill capes, master skill capes, and expert skill capes now have a right-click or long-press emote option when the item is worn. This includes the max cape, but not the completionist cape due to the lack of space for menu options. And you know, this... I'm going to be harsh again. This patch note made me cry.
Yeah.
Figuratively. For two reasons. The first one is that finding the emote icon in the emotes menu is hard in this day and age just because there's so many emotes. So they added the right-click option, which, I mean, makes sense. That one really isn't the one that pushed me over the edge, but the one that pushed me over the edge was the one for the completionist capes because to say that you have a lack of space for menu options on there, once again, shows a problem with the design, the fact that we're relying on right-click context menus to access the features of this item, in this case, the completionist cape, which reminds me of some absurd thing that you'd find in Microsoft Excel. Mm. So, which, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong on this, because you guys interact with these things more than I do, and I guess David in particular, because you have had a comp cape before.
Oh, I still do. I work hard to maintain my comp cape. Don't take that from me. a lot of work.
Am I making a bigger issue out of this than I need to?
I mean, I don't ever use my emote. Really, and now I have like all the teleports are in the spell book, so I have them on an action bar, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But
all right.
So my day to day usage, it doesn't really affect me at all. But I could see someone be annoyed by that.
All right. Yeah. And you know, maybe it's just me coming from the macOS side where you really only right click if you have to. And there's actually a section of Apple's human interface design guidelines that says that the secondary click option or the right click should really only be used to surface menus that are already somewhere else and should just be a way of accommodating the user in that they feel that pretty much everything else should be listed elsewhere in that regard on that front.
Yeah.
And that's why when you buy a Mac these days, still, it's only got one major button on it unless you have a trackpad. They've moved forward in the recent years, but nonetheless, I don't know. I like computers that have one mouse button, and it just works for me that way.
That drives me crazy.
This game relies on the right click.
Yeah, I know. I know RS does too much, and you definitely notice that as a Mac user.
I agree.
Super prayer potions are now tradable. 1 to 4 dose vials and 6 dose flasks can now be traded on the GE, and players can also request assist to create them.
I didn't even see that patch note, but that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good for them.
When would you use a super prayer potion?
Can't you use it to train Herblore now?
Right.
It's like a pretty good potion. And then the other one, the other thing is it's kind of, I've never needed them for PVM, but you know, maybe you're doing something where you want to save an inventory slot for some reason. I just figure if you're at a point where you're that worried about inventory slots, then you should just like focus on the mechanics. I don't know. But it was popular for a while when people were learning small teams at hard mode because kill times were like 25, 26 minutes when people were first learning them. But now kill times have gotten way down, so they're not really necessary anymore. But I think the main use for this has just got to be for training Herblore, right?
Yeah, because they use the ground wyvern bones, which you know how expensive those are, right? So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. You can make extreme prayer potions with primal extract and spark chitin at level 117 Herblore with these. I thought they went into a power burst as well, but I don't remember which one that was. I don't know the power burst recipes offhand.
I'm thinking it's just giving more high level Herblore training options. So I think now you can make extreme prayers a little more easily because you could buy all the ingredients.
Yeah, yeah, and you know with the act track and whatnot, that's very good. The Skeletal Whore teleport can now be used an unlimited number of times instead of just weekly. Okay. I mean, sure. I don't know why you'd want to go that direction, but okay.
Wait, what is that?
The Skeletal Whore teleport can now be used an unlimited number of times instead of just weekly.
I'm just asking what that is.
It's that skeleton bone thing that you can fight once a week. By the Broken Home House an Elite Cruise Roll.
You can fight it once. Wow. Maybe there's like
location around there.
Yeah, maybe for clue. But you could already use the Bone Sack to teleport there, can't you?
Yeah. So I guess this is just kind of smoothing things over.
Yeah, I mean there are definitely clue locations out there, and maybe there's a Tetra Compass location. I don't know.
I mean, that is also where you pick up the Sliskay's invitation box to go to the Empyrean Citadel, too, if you need to pick that up. But
yeah, that's what I use. I use the invitation box when I need teleport there.
Alrighty. Some other changes this week. Sign in with Apple is now supported on iOS devices. As this is separate from the Game Center login, this will create a new account by default if you need this. And this is, of course, paving the way for that full commercial launch of the iOS client when that arrives later this year, because sign in with Apple, for anybody who doesn't know, is a protocol that came out last year in iOS 13. And what it does is that it makes it so that any iOS app that wants to offer a service that needs to sign in, you can do that transparently with sign in with Apple. So what this means, and this is actually a really good thing, anybody who downloads RuneScape from the iOS App Store is going to be able to just press a button and create an account instantly and not need to go through email verification or any of that rigmarole when they want to get started playing RS when it finally arrives on the App Store. Very smooth. All Ancient Familiar pouches will now convert into 20 scrolls each, up from 10, and all summoning XP from Ancient Familiar special attacks cast has been halved, as you now receive twice the number of scrolls. Which I think makes sense because I don't think you really want to give up those Ripper Demon pouches, do you? Unless you really have to for this. So I think this is a good change. I don't know if I'm missing anything from this. I assume you use the Ripper Demon special quite a bit.
Yeah, it's very good, but it's pretty expensive to use still. So I use it sometimes. I use it sometimes. I don't. Just kind of depends what I'm doing. It's definitely worth it at Telos and Solak. I probably would not use it outside those two locations.
Yeah, and you're effectively halving the price with this because you create 20 instead of 10.
Yeah.
Does that change your calculus on it at all?
I mean, it's still again like it's definitely very, very strong, and it's way cheaper to use now than it was before, but it's still so much more expensive than a Steel Titan that outside of Telos and Solak, I just wouldn't bother. But, right. But I mean, I could see, I don't know, I think a Steel Titan is still very solid and just way, and it's a fraction of the cost.
Grand Exchange buy limits for all archaeology materials have been increased from 1,000 to 5,000.
That's good.
Yeah, thank goodness. Probably that was really annoying. I hated having to always ask Clannies to buy stuff for me, or like, you know, it's great. That's great.
And hence comes archaeology, the moneymaker. And I think this is, we're pretty close to rounding out the patch notes here. Augmented masterwork and augmented trimmed masterwork armor will now drop the corresponding broken piece of armor upon death in the wilderness instead of dropping nothing.
Oh
my god, that's so funny.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. Now the question is, does it drop broken masterwork or does it drop one of the constituency pieces? Or
I wish it said, because I still have that second set of masterwork sitting in my bank.
I think logically it would just drop, you know, broken masterwork, then you'd have to repair it. So.
Yeah.
Some other little fixes this week. Yak Track Task 38 Option A can now be incremented correctly when thieving. Fixed an issue where rotating the camera with high lighting quality would cause the game to flicker on iOS, and we saw that when we were doing the demo a few weeks back here on the podcast. So some good little changes made there on that front. And that's it for the patch notes this week. It's a nice bunch of ninja notes with the Ninja Strike. I'm slowly coming around to that name, Strike. Rather than calling it Ninja Flips. Next up is the live stream, the Player Advocacy Group live stream breakdown. This was this past Tuesday with Mod Porky hosting with guests Mods Bolton, and Kalaya and the RS guy on here to debrief about what happened with the Player Advocacy Group. The Player Advocacy Groups were organized by Mod Bolton after being approached by the RS3 executive producer, so Mod Warden, and the senior leadership team, which is interesting. We now know that the RS3 senior leadership and Mod Warden are the ones who initially wanted these Player Advocacy Groups.
Yeah.
I don't know if that puts a different lens on it or what, but we'll see. There's some question about how it fits in with the greater harvesting of information. It's not meant to replace surveys, general community feedback, or news posts. The idea is that there are many things out there that are really deep within the game, and it takes people with a lot of experience on that to lay it out. And they can get that from these player advocacy groups. They said the Ninja Player Advocacy Group was based around finding all the little changes that the Ninja team could make, but are so spread out and deep that the developers themselves wouldn't be able to identify them, so they wanted experts in those fields. Mod Bolton says that this was meant to be a test to compare it with community feedback, because they already had the Ninja Dojo. So the question then asked was, does this provide a different perspective or prioritization than the dojo does? And is the amount of time invested in the PAGs less or more? And the answer to this was that they hit all the metrics exactly as they wanted to with this. That was doing something the Ninja Dojo was not doing. And even then, its general goals and what was suggested were still aligned with the outline that the Ninja Dojo was providing. But it's providing a different kind of value because of the format and the people that were involved in this. And I think if you parse all that out, it means that, yeah, we'd get to the same thing if we just did the Ninja Dojo. But it's different because you actually have people that are taking this hands-on, and they're going to bring it directly to you rather than, you know, needing to form your own conclusions based off of, you know, 50 or so things that come through the Ninja Dojo. And that's what I took out of that one. What do you guys think so far on this about the fact that overall, and this was a sense that Mod Bolton gave, is that the Player Advocacy Group, this first one, was very successful?
This was my overall impression from the beginning. I kind of thought this was how this one did. But also, I think a lot of what he was talking about there shows how I talked about, you know, of course you want experts in the things that they're supposed to be focused on, which yeah. they look like they got. Now, this time around, those experts were very PVM oriented. So of course they were the ones that figured that, you know, brought up the T-92 armor and, you know, probably other things like that as well. I'm still waiting to see what happens next.
All right.
What is the next group?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah. What do you think, David?
I think it's good that they're getting players involved, because I think a lot of times we feel like they're kind of out of touch with certain things, so like cost of PVM, death cost, etc. But I'm sure that's the case for skilling, although it feels like they've done a really incredible job with making skilling worthwhile over the past couple years. So feel like we should keep on that track.
Next up, they found that the champion role had to be someone who would be conscientious about the selection process. And the idea was is that if they formed a biased team, they would scrap the champion and start again.
Okay.
So they felt no bias in this team whatsoever. They felt it was diverse enough. And I knew this would be your reaction.
Whatever. If you don't see that, then what's my opinion? Matter? I mean, seriously. David, what do you think? You're a PBM guy.
Did the members of this player advocacy group lean PBM?
Perhaps. I'm not really, I don't know. What exactly are they pushing? For the most part.
Well, they wanted it to be a group that didn't have bias to it. And what Maud Bolton effectively said here is that if there was bias, they would have scrapped it and started over. Or if the team was biased, rather. Or if they were pushing their own agenda.
It's inevitable that they're going to push their own agenda. Isn't that the point?
Well, but what this looks like is they had a bunch of diversity boxes and they found people that, hey, it checks the box, but really, like, oh, it's a clan leader. It's been around for 15 years. Yeah, but what's he do now? Oh, PVM. Oh, okay.
Here's who they had on the PAG. They had Night Eyes, owner of the Rockman Discord, focuses on learning the Virago fight, so PVM. Shadow Fox, which is person formerly involved with calculators on the RS wiki. Invention. Mr. Dumbledore, Clue Scrolls. Lars Deluxe, Max and Completionist Capes. Holds a leadership position in the Achievement Help and ED Teams community. RR Man, oldest and most respected Iron Man. Top 50 hardcore Ironman until January of 2016. Elwut, which is their skilling and achievements representative. 13-year veteran who has the final boss and master of all titles and a trimmed comp cape and master quest cape. Hoobs and WH. PVM Encyclopedia. So there's three PVMers already on this list right here. At least out front. And when you combine that with the RS guy, that's four people in total who have a heavy PVM.
Dude, I mean, the guy doing Clue Scrolls, it's not like he probably doesn't PVM. I mean, come on.
Most Clue Scroll farmers either do Hellhounds or if they're doing Hards or if they're doing Elites, they do Shadow Creatures. And that, I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah, and one thing that.
Because you could click an aggression potion and an overload and then go take a 5-minute shower and then come back. Like, is that PVMing?
No. What I'm talking about is what do they do in their downtime? They probably PVM. Like, the people that I know that do Clues, like, PVM in their spare time just for fun.
And see, like, here's
what I'm saying is all these guys are probably accomplished in that realm, regardless of.
But I feel like you want someone, the best people on the team are people who have done everything. Like, for me, like, I would want to see someone who's trim comp and master quest cape and has IFB and has 5.6. Like, I feel like you should have someone who's done all of it.
Yeah, I lean more to a specialization kind of model, but
yeah.
For what it's worth, the RS guy did say that one of his PAG members in this case who didn't do PVM, so one of these people on this list doesn't do PVM, and I'm thinking it's probably the Clue Scroll guy. Perhaps.
Yeah.
He said that he was able to get this person on his team, and this is a good part about the team in his view, and it is a good thing, that even the people who weren't involved with PVM or didn't know PVM were still contributing into their PVM discussions, and they taught him bosses, and he started PVMing after that.
Well, I think that almost always happens. I think that for the most, like, sometimes there are accessibility things, and so I see why you want there to be more specialized focus, Tannis. But my experience is that anytime I've taken someone who's never PVM before and thought that PVM was, like, awful or impossible or too difficult, and then I taught them bosses, they never went back to skilling because they immediately were just like, wow, this is more fun, engaging, make more money, et cetera. And so they just, like, I would just say people who try out PVM and really, like, really try to get better at it, almost always, like, 9 out of 10 times, go from being skillers to being PVMers.
Do you want to teach me a Raxor after I'm done with the act track?
Yeah, sure.
All right. We'll see how that goes.
Like, the specialization I want to see is, like, instead of what you were saying with having all of these accomplishments, like, I want to see an IFB, but I want to see a 5.6. They don't have to be the same person. I want to see someone that is, they know skilling inside and out, they're 5.6, what have you, but I also want David on there too. Like, to me, that is a diverse peg rather than, you know, having it so heavily.
Brew.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right.
Oh, if only you could have got to him sooner, Tannis, on that, eh?
Skilling is pretty interesting to, like, get super into. So, like, for me, I've mostly done PVM, but at the start of quarantine, I was, like, 1.9 bill XP exactly. So March 15th is when I started doing the quarantine thing, and now I'm close to 2.4. So I've gained right around 500 mil XP in April, May, June. So in 3 months, I've gained about 500 mil XP, which I don't know if that's a lot or a little. Like, I don't know how efficient skills
are. Yeah, you're killing some archaeology.
Yeah, so it seems to me like you could very easily get about 1 bill XP per year without too much effort.
Well, it's all effort. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what the hours are on that, but it's not nothing.
Moving on, they say player advocacy groups will only be started at a specific dev team's request, so the dev team will have to ask for the player advocacy group. Mod Bolton then proceeded to say, "It was nice to do the ninja peg first because one of the things that tends to happen is that they have a focus and then a player says, here's everything about the focus, but let me tell you about X, Y, and Z. Having this sheet of extras will help make other pegs more focused." And this is exactly it right here. And this is, I'd imagine what we're seeing here is that, you know, ninja team, yes, they got everything. But I imagine this list of X, Y, and Zs were probably PVM related.
Yeah, and look, like, they ended up being good. They ended up being important, right? Like, they probably, that may be where the T92 stuff came in. Because we know that it did come in through this. We just, you know, maybe that was the process. But I would have thought, like, they would have done... Like, I would have looked for that, like, in a PVM-related peg. You know, versus...
Right.
Yeah.
Versus, you know what I mean? Ninja, like, Team.
Because, yeah, exactly.
The RS guy about making the team said he wanted knowledgeable players representative of a community, understanding the game to a level where they could get into the discussion with other team members. And he took people from prominent Discord communities, took nominations, and read interviews from about 60 other players.
It sounds like he put a lot of effort into it.
Oh, he definitely did.
Yeah, he did. I know he reached out to, like, yeah, I know the skilling Discords and... Yeah,
I feel like Ryan did about as good of a job as we can hope for.
Yeah, I just think when you this is part of the nature of the beast, right? If you're looking for influencers, so, because you're soliciting as much feedback from these communities as possible, each person has their own community, right? They were supposed to be kind of gathering that information, but were the influencers. Well, you don't watch a lot of skilling on Twitch, do you?
Nope.
It's almost all, you know what I mean? It's almost all PVM. So is this like the example, like the snake eating its tail here, Shane? Like, is that what
I don't what know. We're doing at this point? I'm in your category where I want to see what happens next with these.
Yeah.
Overall, I feel okay about how this one went, in particular on a couple of points we'll get to in just a moment. The sentiment from Jagex is that the RS guy actually picked a really good group of players for his team.
He picked a hell of an accomplished group of players, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, without a doubt.
And they generated 2+ years of content and other potential changes that are could be implemented. They had meetings, and they categorized them into PVM, bossing, PVM Slayer, clue scrolls, skilling, and other. They had one initial meeting, 4 team meetings, and 1 final retrospective meeting. But once again, the categories PVM bossing, PVM Slayer, clue scrolls, skilling, and other.
Is that breaking your heart, Shane? You feel like Quest must have been in the other?
I'd imagine so, but I don't know how you can do a advocacy group for quests when, you know, quests are always completed. So,
yeah, right, yeah.
They'll have one peg strike in July, another later this year, and then the following will be sprinkled out over the course of the next year or so. 328 total suggestions were made. The actual submission list won't be shared because it'll create biases in terms of what players need or want, and they want to leave the players open to surprises. They'll also be sharing a series of lightly redacted meeting notes. And going forward, very few changes will be made to the PEG process. They felt it was very successful. They will be making some changes, however, to the membership criteria to prevent some NDA conflicts. And all PEGs in the future will likely need an NDA. And didn't we say that, too? Is that, you know, if you're doing this thing, put it under an NDA.
Well, I thought it was.
No, this one was not.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Yeah, I think that's...
Do you remember that video I sent you where RS Guy went on some other podcast, but it was really just a 6-hour-long live stream talking about all the changes that were made? I think that's what this is referring to, because they had some other PAG members on there.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Like, it seems like it could be dicey when you're dealing with influencers. Like, I don't know how that works because they have the communities that they're going to want to share the stuff with.
Yeah. And, you know, we had this discussion after PAGs were announced, and I said, if anybody from our community ever gets selected to do one of these, you're going to have to make a choice. You're either going to do the podcast for a month or however long this takes, or you're going to go do this. You're not going to do both, because we here believe that even if these weren't NDA'd, it would be a conflict of interest to have somebody on the show who was doing that kind of thing week to week. And that's just the way we roll here at Update. So I'm glad they're doing the NDA thing. The tier 92 armor fix was escalated due to the result of the player advocacy group. Okay. We talked about that earlier. The PAG charters, as in what it's designed to do, as well the retrospectives, will still be posted publicly when the PAG strike launches. Updates related to the PAGs won't be labeled as such because it's primarily going to be a ninja team-led effort, and they're not involved with implementation or balancing. So what this means is that if a ninja strike comes out, you won't know if it's the result of the player advocacy group or not. Which kind of makes sense because they're designed to be a communication funnel into the greater workings of the dev team. Now, when it comes to the future of PAGs, he said if something comes up and it's a dev team's request, it will be taken on as a PAG. The developer team will have to have a clear goal of what they want from the PAG. It will have to be time-boxed and has to be a fair usage of the volunteer's time, which I think from the episode when we talked about this with Sirion and Diana, that was their biggest concern, is that you're using all these volunteers, but is it a fair use of their time? And it should be noted that PAG Champion is a paid role. So, I was pleased to know that they are very conscious of the volunteers' times. So, we'll just have to see how that rolls in the future. In the future, Jagex is already thinking about what the next PAG could be. It could be RuneScape-related, it could be old-school-related, or it could be about one of their unannounced games. It could be, should there be a PAG for this feature? And over time, they hope more and more of the devs will become comfortable with it. And as this grows, there will be more and more involvement.
I mean, it might take some time to get comfortable with what was that saying? With PAGs?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can't just jump right into PAGs. You gotta...
Yeah, the dev teams have to become comfortable with them.
Yeah, they do.
And, you know, that makes sense because... In the way that it's structured in most game studios, you have content designers and then you have programmers, and the content designers design the content and the programmers implement it. And you often have cases sometimes where the programmers are not content designers. And what that does is it puts you into a situation where you can have developers that are extremely passionate about something because they're also designers, and then you... That's the point where you would get friction between them and the player advocacy group. So that's what it means by becoming comfortable.
So there's a lot of friction then when you're between the PAGs. You're saying there's friction?
Friction between potentially between the PAG and the dev team. Friction between the PAG and the dev team. Yeah.
I see. So they might not bend over backwards to get another PAG going.
Exactly. Because there's lots of software developers out there and content designers who feel their design is king and they don't want to effectively have outside influence because you're dealing with people, remember from our game design session, who have been doing game design as their passion for years and don't necessarily want to be told how to do something.
That's fair.
And for all intents and purposes and just to give as much credit as we can to the actual game designers out there, that's entirely true. Because you don't want to have somebody come in and say, you know, hey, you're going to be implementing this new boss, but you're JX's best PVM JMod, and you're going to, you know, have the PVM PAG tell you what some of the things should be that you're going to do with it, right? You might want to design that on your own. And perhaps PVM is a bad choice, but...
Like, that could turn into a verb, like, oh, man, it just got pegged, huh?
And let me actually give you a really good example on this. Do you guys remember the so-called hit game 2048, the mobile game?
I never played it.
I remember that game, actually.
Yeah. So 2048 is a game, and what many people do not know is that 2048 is a copy of the game principles of another game called Threes. And what happened with this is that the company behind Threes, who was some game designers and UI designers, spent a lot of time designing their game and researching it and whatnot and actually putting money into the R&D side of it. And then they come out with this game that, you know, is a beautiful game. It's got good sound design. It's got fun little graphics and whatnot. And it was a very unique concept. The idea of being you combine base numbers, ones and twos, to make threes. And then you combine those threes to make sixes and then 12s and 24s and so on and so forth. And this was the initial design of this game. But then lo and behold, you have this web game come out, copy the concept of threes, call it 2048. And for some reason, that one becomes a hit, whereas Threes in itself is here sitting in the iOS App Store on its own and just had its own concept ripped off by someone who just copied it. And that's the difference between what is game design and just being a software developer in some cases, if you're talking about games. So effectively, you can have a good design for something, whether it be a standalone thing like Threes or maybe a new concept for the farming skill or a new boss mechanic, and you can have that design as a content designer inside Jagex. But on the other hand, imagine one of these developers just had their idea lifted, or sorry, content designers just had one of their ideas lifted from them and implemented by someone else. How would that make that designer feel? And that's why
probably
the question,
like, he got pegged, right?
Exactly. And that is why developers, or sorry, content designers, are going to have to ask for this PEG influence, and it's going to have a clear goal in it, because then you can wind up with this kind of situation.
Yeah, I think that establishing clear rules and guidelines is always like has to be a first step for development of any safe PEG community.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll just have to wait and see which one, if any, come next. But from the sound of it, they'd want to do some. Next up, they said, how much GP did the PEG make from this update this week, as in the PEG members? They said
that. Hey, I want to do that for free.
They said they had no information on what the implementation would be for this or when it would arrive. And in the future, if there is any kind of thing like this where this comes up, they'll be putting watches on accounts to see if there's any kind of like insider trading and whatnot going on. And then they'll be dealt with.
That's so interesting to me. Like, how do you litigate inside? Like, what happens if there is insider trading?
Well, what you would do is you have two ways of approaching it. So suppose there's a update that is going to change the value of some item in game, and then a PEG member or PEG champion goes and makes a profit off of that. What they can do is twofold. One, they can either ban the account or remove them or temporarily ban them or do whatever they see fit. Number two, and this is where the idea of putting everything under an NDA comes in into the future, is that if people sign an NDA, there's going to be a clause inside that NDA that you agree not to do any kind of this market manipulation stuff with that. And then if someone did do that, Jagex would have the legal reason to go after that person for a lawsuit for breaking that NDA.
Well, that makes sense. Well,
so,
hopefully
so there's
that
two ways they can do it.
Emerge.
Yeah. And, you know, this is exactly what I thought. And Tanis, you remember one of the first things I said about these PEGs is I said there needs to be an NDA. And this is exactly the reason I had in the back of my mind.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, don't worry, Shane. Insider trading is taken way more seriously at the Bank of Gillinor than it is to Goldman Sachs. How about that?
Or if you're Martha Stewart, you get to go to jail and knit a quilt.
Hey, she did her time. She's a cold woman.
Let's see. Could a PEG be used for new contents instead of just existing? And they said, yeah, it could. And the idea behind this is that it would have to foster deep understanding from expert players. And the likely way they would do that is not that they would show off new content on the whole. They would just ask if it was about PVM for new bossing concepts, for example, which I imagine, David, is something you'd be very interested in, because I mean the game is kind of stagnant at this point, you said, in terms of everybody knowing what's up for all the various bosses out there.
Yeah, yeah. When it comes to like the whole PEG community, I'm definitely interested in fostering a deeper exploration and understanding. I think that's crucial.
And the last one, changes for the next time, changes to the rules, clear up the charter, what should be done mid-PEG, NDA, and so on and so forth. And
what
that
to
was
do mid-PEG?
Yeah, mid-PEG. Mid-player,
like in the middle of it?
Mid-player advocacy group, yeah. And that's it for the live stream, pretty much. I want to touch on one other thing that I didn't write down in the notes but came up. And I'd appreciate your opinions on this. And I realize this might be a bit of a difficult subject, and I don't know if I want to open this can of worms right now. Someone asked in chat about the beach, if the beach was coming back this summer. And their answer was, we can't say anything on that.
Oh, are they serious? Are they serious? Like, is that going to be their big content drop? Uh-oh.
And I said, and I said this in to you guys earlier, I said, if the beach comes out in July, you could be teasing it now. If it's going to come out in August, you can lend some kind of hint to it. And the very fact you can't say yes or no to the beach at this point is a little bit weird to me.
Aren't we more worried that the beach is recycled content, so that's not going to do it?
Yeah. And the fact there's no communication about even if the beach is arriving.
What the?
And it's got to be July or August. That was very concerning to me.
I mean, I do want it so I could AFK 99 construction on my Iron Man, but still, I can't. That can't be a big update.
Something's weird.
Yeah, something is very fishy.
Something's off.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's the story we talked about last week where they're getting kicked in the nuts with a lawsuit. I mean, just saying. Where'd the plans for the summer content go? Hey, is that our plans for the summer in the shredder over there? Oh, shit. Along with everything else. Damn it.
Mod Warden did make a comment somewhere that the quest is making its way close to release. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to get that big. We are going to get that big quest.
Desperate Measures.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine, I guess.
Yeah.
It better be like Needle Skips. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it needs to be that caliber.
Yeah, because I mean, there was definitely some issues with Desperate Times, I feel, but that's a topic for another show.
I'm just saying it needs to be high quality. It needs to be a seriously hard-hitting quest.
And the concern is just that, you know, we're entering summer now, and they can't even talk about if the beach is coming back for summer. Not even a yes or a no. Just, we can't talk about it.
And see, what it's, that is hard as a consumer, right? I mean, either you've already paid up and you're on Yak Track, or you're going, okay, well, I'm going to pay my bill next month, but what have you done for me lately? Like, we're going to have a discussion at some point.
Well, we are having that discussion right now, and I feel like this discussion should have started at the start of May. At the start of June.
Yeah. You can't leave stuff fester. That lesson should have been learned
last summer. And before that with Menophos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, summertime is really when people want the most content, and it seems like for a little while now, it's felt like that's been vacant. Because it seems like each year they make the mistake of putting all their eggs in some massive summer update, and then when it doesn't go off well, it's just like kind of a disaster.
Yeah. And I've talked many times before about the Star Trek Online roadmap. You know, two or three times a year we get a little picture, a JPEG, showing what is possibly coming in the next few months. And that's all I'm asking for here is, you know, give us a bit of a roadmap, is saying, hey, July will be the summer update. March was archaeology. This should have been in May. This should have been in June, and so on and so forth. But, like, there just needs to be some kind of forward vision here to give players something to look forward to. We don't need to know what the details of them are going to be. We just need to know that something is on the way. Because right now, all we know that's on the way is more ninja strikes.
And more pegs.
Potentially,
A lot more pegs.
Yeah. All right. I just wanted to bring that up because that was something that was slightly concerning to me in the live stream. But let's talk about the World Cup of Quests. We're in the quarterfinals right now. Currently, we got a vote going on for Dragon Slayer versus Monkey Madness. Which one are you guys going to be choosing over Dragon Slayer or Monkey Madness?
I voted for Dragon Slayer. To me, that's... Oh,
me too. Yeah.
OFC. All right.
Yeah. Dragon Slayer is like could win it. I mean, I don't think it will, but
I hope it does, because it's the only one of my original bracket that is still kicking.
If the people that pick Monkey Madness over this, they check them for COVID. COVID test them right now, because they got fevers. It's a fever dream.
Clan Quest was evenly split on this.
Give them COVID test.
Currently, the vote is going 62% Dragon Slayer, 38% Monkey Madness.
Well, that's not evenly split, though.
I said Clan Quest was split evenly.
Okay. I thought you meant that Clan Quest was at 62-38.
No.
Because 62-38 is rubbing.
62% public is Dragon Slayer, 38% Monkey Madness. It was about 50-50 in Clan Quest.
Wow, so everybody that likes Monkey Madness is in Clan Quest.
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
It is seen as one of the original quests that was done in typical RuneScape Jagex style that we don't have anymore.
Oh, you mean frustrating, hard,
charmful,
annoying?
I like Monkey Madness. I've done it about 4 or 5 times across different accounts, but it's not. Dragon Slayer is iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Then we had another round in the quarterfinals. This time it was the World Wakes versus Fate of the Gods. I voted for Fate of the Gods on this one. And, you know, we just can't shake this World Wakes.
World Wakes.
I know.
It's got to be World Wakes.
World Wakes won 65-35.
Of course. Come on,
Shane. Part of my problem with this is that, you know, I feel like this is the divergent point because, you know, back before World Wakes, every quest was its own unique entity. Now we're back into after World Wakes in the Sixth Age. We had the Sliskay arc, and now we have the Elder Gods arc. It feels like we're in this constant state of everything being so high strung. And the only real break that we got from that was the Needle Skips, and you know it did provide enough backing for Desperate Times, but also You Are It. And I had to choose Fate of the Gods because I feel like it provided more new lore behind it than the World Wakes did, and the World Wakes kind of pushed us down this path of the Sixth Age, which moved us away from the old style of RS quests. And I'm not saying any of these are bad. It's just that's my reason as to why I voted for Fate of the Gods.
Let's see. I definitely went the other way on that.
All right. David, which one did you vote for?
I voted for World Wakes just because it kicked off a new era of the game. Like, that was that was why. But because just in terms of impact, that one was pretty huge, I feel like.
All righty.
I know, it was good. And, like, if I remember right, that one was voiced, too, wasn't it? That was during that era.
Yeah. Like, well, Fate of the Gods is voiced, too, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I feel like I just did it on my
own. That's when you go to for Netscape the first time.
Yeah, because Azanadra and Sliske are outside talking, and you could hear them.
Oh, wait.
Right? Isn't that Fate of the Gods?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so I think I'm pretty sure Fate of the Gods is voiced. Now, it's not voiced in the same way because there's not as much dialogue, but the dialogue that does exist is voiced.
I don't know. It felt consequential, though. Don't you think? Like, there was a real sense of, like, consequence to World Wakes that you don't have with Fate.
I think they're both excellent, but I think World Wakes has more impact.
I do remember when Fate released, I remember the, like, graveyards at the portal. It was just dead people over and over.
Yeah. All right. Okie dokie. Let us move on to our Patreon spot. Actually, no, one thing I want to say before we do that, and this is what I was... You remember, Tanis, when I started this out, I said, I feel like something's missing, right?
Mm-hmm. You did.
There's a huge summer sale going on in Solomon's General Store.
No, that's not it.
Yeah, it is.
Oh. No, I know.
Are you thinking of something else?
No, I'm messing with you.
Okay. But yeah, check out Solomon's General Store. You need an action bar. You need a bank booster. Now is a perfectly good time to pick that up and purchase it because some items are up to 75% off. And I'm just logging in right now, and I'll show you guys what that is. But I don't know. Are you guys in the hunt for anything in particular? Either of you?
I've got the pets I need. So
yeah, I'm legendary pets are also on. If anybody doesn't have those, and
if you don't have those, definitely pick one up.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Where do you use yours? I used to use mine, but I haven't used mine in a couple of years.
Well, you probably have a familiar everywhere you go. I mean, I use mine as it helps me clear up the game screen essentially.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I use it as a drop picker upper thing.
Oh, because with this the like fetch.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah, that's cool. That makes sense.
And accessibility.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're looking for things here, action bars are on sale. Let's see, how much is this? 97 rune coins out of 195. Yeah, action bars are 50% off if you need those. Keepsake keys are on sale too if you need those.
They're always a good buy.
Bank boosters are also 50% off. Let's see, what else is here in here? Should be a sale button on here. Oh, yeah, Solomon sale. There we are. Huge list of items on sale. 91 items currently on sale here. The Virago Shard, Brutish Weapon Packs. But yeah. I mean, if you don't have a legendary pet, perfect time to pick one up. I might pick up some action bars or bank presets, I think.
Bank presets would be real nice.
I feel like
David probably has every action bar available.
Yeah, I always have five open.
Oh my.
But I need a six, though. Like, five is not enough, I don't think.
What's the maximum you can buy?
I'm not sure. I mean, I own 10, so I don't know. I don't need more. You don't need 10. That was totally unnecessary. I don't know why I did that.
I mean, hey, if you can have them, why not, right?
Why not?
Bank boosters are all there. Action bars. Maybe you can only purchase the bank presets from in-game. Because I'm not seeing them on the website here.
Okay, yeah, those used to cost, they're really expensive. I remember I bought, like, one or two before.
Yeah.
How you did it, but yeah, they're expensive.
Yeah, I bought all of them just because I would be so annoyed not to have them.
But, yeah, and that's the only thing, like, they rent them to you, too. Like,
yeah, I know. I see that as a loss to rent something like that, you know?
Yeah. I was just about to say that. To me, that's just like, I don't know if toxic's the right word. I feel like that it gets overused, you know, but like, that's what it really is kind of toxic, isn't it?
It's kind of EA-ish, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
There are little things they could get rid of like that, that would just like make them, in my mind, just seem like such a better company and game runners. Like, I don't know. Maybe they make a ton on those, though. I don't know.
Well, I think it's better. It would be better to pay a higher price than to offer a lower price making it rental, because that just, I don't know. It doesn't set right. That's me.
Oh, that's interesting. The RuneCoin shop is currently unavailable on mobile.
Oh, uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Get that up and running, boys.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that is or what to click on here, but nonetheless, I hope bank presets are on sale, and if they're not, they're definitely something that should be on sale. I wasn't able to check that, so we'll just leave it at that. But
they're still big ass sale, right?
Yeah, Solomon's sale here, action bars, bank boosters, practically anything that you could need. Now is the perfect time, and I think we can all agree that if you haven't, you definitely ought to pick up the legendary pet.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, we do have a question this week, but before we do that, I'll thank our Patreon subscribers for this episode. This week, I would like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, James W., JW, Jason S., Jim M., Joe M., John P., Kevin G., Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, R Memories, Rastafa, Ricky A., Ripith, Samantha R., Steve D., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Zachary K., Zant, and Zez. Thank you for all of your support. It truly does mean the world to us and everything that we do here for supporting us here at RSBNB Update. And if you want to learn more about what all this is, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. For as little as a dollar a month, you can gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits that we're doing. And, you know, this one came down to the wire here, the poll. We actually had to tie break it before we began the podcast of what the monthly bit is going to be. But it is going to be player input through the ages. So that's everything, of course, like power to the player, Rune Labs, player power, all the various guaranteed content polls and whatnot. We're going to talk about that and their impact that they had on the game. We also, of course, do have a VIP tier where for $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord, and I mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, if you want to give the ultimate gift, you can become an insider. You get, with that, exclusive access to our clips from the Clip Show, in addition to everything else. So, with that being said, everything else is, of course, our monthly bit, our inside RSBNB update, which the feature this month is David. We got a little bit of an interview about who exactly this guy is sitting with us here on the podcast, bit of his favorite things, his history and whatnot. You can read that on patreon.com/RSBNB this weekend. Of course, we also have our round table and movie night, which is happening this coming Monday. Made a bit of a mistake last week with that, but it's coming this coming Monday, which I believe is July 6th, and we're watching Rocky IV, Tanis. That's your pick.
Hell yeah, man.
Some good old Cold War
fun. Can't wait. Can't wait. We're going to put a bounty on Drago.
Are you a Creed fan, Tanis?
Yeah. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Michael B. Jordan. I think he's awesome.
He was definitely, that was very good casting. Very good casting.
Yeah.
And then on July 11th, we'll have our round table, which will be after the monthly bit releases, which is a discussion on anything and everything RuneScape related. Time to be announced on that one. So we will see you all then. And if any of this sounds interesting to you or you just want to support the podcast, is at patreon.com/RSBNB. And thank you to everybody for your support. We're going to move on into our audio question right now, and this one is from the RR Man.
Hey, hey, it's RR Man NZ here. How's it going? So I'm finally back to archaeology after Big Game Hunter sessions and, oh man, Divine Dysoning. Whew, that was good money for a little while. Anyway, so I'm over at the, you know, digging up the spots and getting the artifacts and all that. And I just wanted to ask you about Chronotes. They're so cheap now, so I just went out and bought 100k of them so I could get all the associate unlocks a bit quicker as soon as I got the qualification. But I don't think I would have had enough at the level if I just sort of grinded out collections, maybe, I don't know. But I'm just wondering, did you guys ever buy any of the Chronotes? Or did you just wait it out and, you know, unlock them over time? Anyway, second thing is, you guys talked about Tetrachrumpus grinding, was it? Is that what you called it? Just wondering, first off, how you do that. What are the best collections for it? And is it actually necessary to do? Do you do it during those lull periods that everyone talks about between certain levels? Or does it slow you down to make a bit of money? What are the ins and outs of it? And yeah, how's the best way to do it? Because I assume I'm getting close to that point. Well, I hope everyone's doing all right out there. Not just the hosts, but the listeners too. And if you really need something to listen to, those Legends of RSBNB episodes that Shane put out are actually really excellent. So jump on that Patreon. Peace out.
Thanks for the plug. Chronotes. Personally, I haven't bought any yet, but I will once I reach Guildmaster, because I'm going to need that for all the outfit and the matic and all that other fun stuff. But I had enough for everything on my own, building everything up, except for the soil box upgrade at level 70. But I actually didn't purchase that one to 500 because I feel 250 is a good spot for the soil box in terms of the archaeology loop. But that's me.
Oh, okay. And yeah, and you're every certification, aren't you? Like, you got them all.
Except for Guildmaster.
Except for Guildmaster.
Yeah.
I'm actually followed, like, very similar to RR Man. I didn't buy Chronotes, didn't need to buy Chronotes until I got to about Associate. And then I wanted, I absolutely needed more room in my material bank.
Yeah. And, you definitely want to purchase those ones.
So I bought, like, a few of the pieces of the outfit. I had to have the hat because, you know, fashion scape.
Woo.
And but that's when I didn't buy them until associate level, basically.
I always purchase precision upgrade first and then material storage upgrade.
Yeah, I need that. And the auto sifter is the other one that
that and I don't use it anymore.
Yeah, I know you're a purist, but I love it. I love it, love it, love it.
How about you, David?
Yeah, well, so I didn't have to buy Chronotes until Guildmaster. And at Guildmaster, I bought a fair number so I could get the Matic of Space and Time, the outfit, and the precision upgrade. And so I am currently on my main, I'm 188 mil archaeology XP. And on my Iron Man, I'm 90 archaeology, about to hit 90.
Such a great skill, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my favorite skill they've ever released by far. I really love it. But I have sold 1.5 mil Chronotes on my main, and I currently have about 1.3 mil banked. So if you Tetra farm post 120, you end up being able to sell off about 3 mil in Chronotes for getting 200 mil XP. And that's a fair chunk. Like, they sell for about 165.
GP.
So if you do, say, what's 3 million times 165? Almost 500 mil. So, hey, maybe if you want that new tier 92 armor, just do archaeology.
And that's what you were saying about archaeology money making. That and materials.
Yeah. So the other part of the question, Tetrachrumpus farming.
Yeah.
Basically, the most efficient way to train archaeology is to do collections for either the batteries through the Zeros ones or through Tetrachrumpuses. And the reason for that is that while Tetra Compasses might seem like they take some time away from training the skill, because they give 1.5 tomes each, plus between 4 and 7 artifacts that you can get to restore, doing Tetra Compasses is actually really, really, really high XP.
And to just clarify, you said 1.5 tomes. You're guaranteed to get at least one. Sometimes you get two.
Yeah, and it balances out to be one. If you did, you know, quick chat in mind, I've done 138 Tetra Compasses.
Okay, so you can find a spot for that. It is in quick chat. We were wondering about that. Tetra Compass pieces, if you're not farming them, are 1 out of 1,500 from every time you excavate, so there's that. There's 4 pieces to a Tetra Compass, and you need the 4 colors the 5 colors from each of the dig sites: Tyrian Purple from Zaros, Cobalt Blue from Ceridomen, Malachite Green from Bandos, Armadil Yellow, which is, of course, obvious, and Cadmium Red from Zamorak on that. And as for which collections you can do, and, you know, Tanis, you were also wondering about this pre-show, the first one you could Tetra Compass farm is at level 72, Ceridomen 2 from Sriracha, but that's 9 artifacts to get 1 Tetra Compass piece. But it gets better. You can go further up to Green Gobbo Goodies 1, which is 5 Tetra Compass pieces. 5 artifacts for a Tetra Compass piece. And that one starts at 76 and is completable at 83. And you get 1 Tetra Compass piece for handing in 5 artifacts. That's the I'm going to practice saying this for when we do the Warforge lore special. The Akelishan Blinder Mask, the Narogoshan Hobdagob Ball, the Rekishan War Tether, the Thoro Obshin Battle Standard, and the Yurko Lock Stink Grenade. Let's see how I did there. How did I do, folks?
Didn't do too bad. Holy crap.
Sounds pretty good. Yeah, I'm so post 120, I have done all of my Tetra Compass. I've done all my XP at Red Rum Relics 3, which is 4 artifacts for a Tetra Compass.
And that's the next one. I want to talk about the Red Rum Relic series, which the first one starts at 81, Red Rum Relics 1, and is finished at level 94. And then there's Red Rum Relics 2 and Red Rum Relics 3.
Yeah, the reason I'm doing this is because the Red Rum Relics 3 is 3 artifacts from the 115 spot and then 1 from the 119 spot.
That's ideal.
The 115 spot, which is where you end up spending a ton of your time, is where you get the spear tip. And I don't know what the current price is, but the spear tip that I got when I restored it and then sold it as a tier 90 spear, I ended up profiting 140 mil from getting that. That's with buying all of my own materials, not excavating.
And to be fair on this, you can get Tetra Compasses from the other Green Gobbo goodies, but they have 5 or 6 artifacts to them. But Red Rum Relic seems to be specifically designed around Tetra Compass farming.
Yeah, and I also think that the XP per hour is either comparable or maybe even better than just doing the 119 spot, because you get those tomes and you get the extra artifacts. And even if it wasn't, I would do it anyways, because, hey, maybe I'll get a Guildmaster Tony's Matic.
Yeah, or even, you know, the 1 in 100 chance of getting the Dragon Matic.
Yeah, and I've gotten 1 Dragon Matic. So I've gotten 1 Spear. So for 200 mil, I've gotten 500 mil in Chronotes, 1 Dragon Matic and 1 Spear Tip, and so that's 180. So I've gonna make maybe 600 or 700 mil from 200 mil archaeology, which is pretty great. Well, obviously there's cost too.
Yeah,
I'm not factoring that in at the moment.
You hear that, folks? I just want to let everyone process what was said here. So there we have it. I mean, if you haven't done Tetra Compass farmings, I would highly recommend it. I haven't been doing it recently because I've been on a data gathering drive for my archaeology math series, and it seems to be working out well, and I'll probably be able to go back to that in a bit. But that's what I did That's what I did. I want to say from I forget what the band is. What's the band before 98? Because you know 98 to 100, you're at one spot. There's one right before that. I forget exactly what it was, but that band before 98, I did Tetra Compass Farming exclusively for it after completing the collections. And that's basically become what my archaeology training method is that first you complete all the collections you can at a specific site, and then after that you move to your nearest Tetra Compass Farm unless you're gathering data like I am. And
yeah,
that's the way I've been doing it. You also mentioned that you can do the pylon batteries too for completing the various Zaros collections.
Yeah, I did. I can't remember what the levels are. I think it's up to 118. Yeah, there's like a 107, a 114, and a 118, I believe.
For Zaros 3 and 4. And
yeah, and so you obviously get chances at getting a staff piece, which is worth a lot. And the number, I think I did maybe 30 or 40 of those collections, and you get that nice like 2 mil XP drop from turning in all your batteries, yeah. Which is kind
of
cool.
It's nice seeing pictures of those and whatnot.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting the way the skill is designed, because it seems to me like overall Warforge is just by far the best place to train, and then Carad Et is second.
Yeah, it seems like you spend most of your time at Warforge.
Yeah, by far Warforge the most, and then Carad Et second, and then there's a kind of a drop off to Ceridoman, and then Zamorak and Armadyl especially. There's just no reason to ever do Armadyl, basically,
which is a shame, because that one looks absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I've spent probably less than 1% of my time training archaeology at the Stormguard Citadel, which is sad because it's probably the coolest looking location. It's just so inefficient to train there.
Yeah. Alrighty. Tanis, you have anything else on that? Or are we good?
I do not.
All right. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email questions@rsbnb.com or leave them on Twitter @rsbnb. And we'll do a wider question pool next week on the podcast. But right now we're going to move on to tech news. And we got some rather unsettling tech news this week, but we're going to get into it with something a little bit on the happy side first. Chrome OS, we talked about Chromebooks a couple weeks ago and how they are moving forward in their advancement. But this week we got news that Chrome OS is preparing for Steam gaming support, starting with the 10th generation Intel Chromebooks. So you'll be able to install Steam and run some games on your Chromebook.
Oh, that's cool.
Which, I mean, when you think about it, we talked about exactly what Chromebooks do. Whew! They're just advancing in leaps and bounds following this.
Yeah.
Google is actually working with Steam to bring it to Chrome OS, which says a lot if Google is, you know, sticking out the arm and helping to bring Steam over to it. And, you know, we've all, of course, heard before of Steam running on Linux, and there has been side projects before to get Linux applications to run on Chrome OS. So the idea has always been, it's always been in the back of some people's minds, that maybe you could, you know, kind of in a bootlegish kind of way, make it so that Steam could run on your Chromebook, and then you could run games from that. But now with this fully sanctioned method on here, it certainly looks like this is what they're going to be doing with this on here. And, you know, it just shows what laptops have become in terms of being oh so powerful with this. And it's really changing the definition for gaming, because, you know, you realize you'll be able to run your light games, like your games that have low graphical requirements, but Steam also has the feature where you can stream directly from a more powerful computer. So you could, in theory, just use your Chromebook as a front end for your main gaming computer and just stream to it if you really wanted to on there. We don't know when this is going to ship, but it certainly looks like it's something that Google wants to make happen with the help of Steam. Because there's even high-end AMD Ryzen based Chromebooks that are going to be, arriving that have, you know, more GPU horsepower than just your standard Chromebook with an Intel-based chip.
What do? Like, plug a controller into it or what? Like
USB, yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. I think they only have USB-C, so you need a USB-C to USB-A adapter, but you'd just be able to, you know, plug it in. It would work if you didn't want to use the keyboard and mouse. So, once again, the world of gaming continues to evolve. And, you know, one thing I've always wanted to do is I always wanted to get someone with a Chromebook and see how RuneScape would run. Because, you know, Chromebooks can run Android apps. So I'm wondering how the RuneScape Android version would run on a Chromebook. If anybody out there has a Chromebook to try such a thing. So... the world is interesting now. All righty. Do we have any TikTok users in the audience? In our hosting panel, then. Going once, going twice. And boy, we had an off-the-rails discussion in pre-show that started with TikTok and moved to other places. But nonetheless, iOS 14 came out last week. And you remember we talked about... all the new features arriving in iOS 14. And one of them on the user privacy front is that iOS 14 will show you when an application requests access to your clipboard. And it was revealed on iOS 14 that every 1 to 3 keystrokes, even if you're not in the app, or sorry, it looks like this is in the app, but every 1 to 3 keystrokes, TikTok was looking at your iOS clipboard. So if you had a bank number in there, a phone number, a password, TikTok was looking at it. TikTok said this was an oversight and they patched it out, but that still doesn't alleviate the security concerns because people have, of course, reverse engineered TikTok before and found it generating many calls back home on there. And following the release of iOS 14, the iOS 14 beta, a number of other apps have been revealed as snooping on your clipboard. Some of them in the news category include Al Jazeera English, CBC News in Canada, CNBC, Fox News, The New York Times, NPR, Reuters, The Huffington Post, and Vice News. Also, a bunch of games, including 8-Ball Pool, Fruit Ninja, Letter Soup, PUBG Mobile, Water Marbling, Bejeweled, Golf Masters, social networking apps as well, Totalk, TikTok, Talk, Truecaller, Viber, Weibo, and Zoosk. And some other apps that you might have on your phone include AccuWeather, Bed Bath & Beyond, Hotels.com, and the Weather Network. All these apps are snooping on your iOS clipboard.
That's crazy. Well, I'm glad I don't use a clipboard very much for that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. After this report was published, a bunch of the app developers went forward and removed this feature from it.
That's like everything you copy and paste, right? Like, why would that?
Exactly.
Why would that be there in the first place? Like, what was their explanation for why it would have ever been there?
Yeah, I don't know. And you know, the example it gives is somewhere where you would want to do this is the UPS app. For instance, it pulls a piece of text from the clipboard, and in the event that text matches the characteristics of a UPS tracking number, the app prompts the user to track the package. Chrome does it, and if it's a URL, it will prompt the user to browse it. And those are two examples of where it can be done differently on there. So something to always keep your eye on if you use any of these apps, and really shows some of the privacy advancements that iOS 14 is going to make when it comes this fall. And I don't know about you, both of you guys, but I'm really looking forward to iOS 14 this time around. I haven't looked forward to an iOS release in a long time, but I am looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some of them features.
The accessibility features, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, David?
Accessibility features, yes. Something this reminds me of always is it's always interesting to me the way that people talk about and describe and debate privacy, because every time someone mentions privacy concerns as a downside to like a law or something that could end up being really beneficial, I always think it's interesting because it feels like the cat's out of the bag on that one. Like don't we all just assume we're being constantly tracked and monitored every second of every day?
You're leaking data everywhere you go. Anybody who is online and has a Facebook account, a Google account, a Twitter account, whatever, you are leaking data, and it's a question of where that data goes. You can't stop this.
Since you can't stop it, wouldn't it be more effective to just put out random stuff? Like you had multiple personalities or something. Like, oh, you want to dial me in? Good luck with that, because I'm looking at a million unrelated things.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing Google has done that's good on this is that if you go into your Google account settings, there's now an option to have it automatically delete your history every 3 months. So it'll keep no more than 3 months of your history, yeah. Because I know if I look at my Google account, I have stuff going all the way back to like 2003.
Yeah, I just feel like every government and every CEO can know every single thing about me in like 2 minutes if they wanted to. And it is what it is.
And you know what the sad part is? Many people just opt freely into that.
I guess I'm one of those people.
We all are, to be honest, because we all use the free services provided by Google and the like. I was actually thinking this week is that it'd be really nice to see somebody out there like a Google or a Facebook or a Twitter try a business model where, you know, you have to pay a small fee, something like $2 to $3 a month to use their service, but in exchange you don't get data mined, and see what the response of that would be.
I don't know, man.
Like, would you pay $2 to $3 a month to not have any data mining on
would I
Google?
Yeah, but Americans are cheap and lazy, so I don't know.
Yeah, and most people don't even know what's happening. So
yeah, I don't know.
Next piece of tech news, Microsoft Edge is apparently being forced on Windows users by way of automatic updates. So what's happening?
When you say forced, what do you mean forced? Like default browser or what?
What's happening is that if you get the most recent version of Windows, the most recent feature release, as they call it, Edge will automatically open itself up. It will ask you if you want to switch away from Chrome or whatever your existing browser is. It has a shortcut added to the taskbar and the desktop. So it's effectively installing itself, opening itself once, and asking if you want to move away from your browser that you had.
And that's one time?
Apparently it has happened multiple times for people.
Chrome asked me that every single time I open Gmail from Edge. Every time.
Interesting. So like Chrome asked you it.
Hey, Chrome asked me that all the time. Do you want Chrome to be your default browser?
Oh, when you open Gmail at Edge, you're saying.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, so Google's kind of
every single time.
Right, and this is in the Windows operating system, and that's why it's able to pop itself out and assert itself. And, I mean, yes, this is their way of getting people to use their browser, but I have a mixed feelings about this because this is, you know, a brand new browser, and what you're effectively installing is the next version of Windows 10. Many people don't realize it, but this spring update that has just come out and people are now getting is the big feature release, the yearly release from Microsoft on that. And whenever they add new software to their operating systems, it just gets added to your start menu, your taskbar, and your desktop. And I think maybe opening it is going a bit far, but I think that they are entirely within their right to add shortcuts to it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a problem.
And you use
that,
Edge, right? Because of the accessibility.
I use Edge, and then when they made the change where Chrome apps, like you could use Chrome apps in Edge, then I was set.
Yeah, Chrome extensions, right?
Yeah, like it was great. And like, and the reason for which is like I'd have to use different extensions in Chrome to get my uniformly like dark background. Because if you like, I use a high contrast, and that won't bleed through unless I'm using Edge. Like, I'll still end up with like white web pages and stuff if I'm using something other than Edge.
Yeah, and I mean, you got a very good web browser on that front too. So
yeah, I mean, I've never had a problem with it. Like, I've never thought that I need something that I didn't have.
Yeah. All right, David, how do you feel about browsers in this day and age?
I mean, I became a Chrome convert around when it came out and just haven't switched back. It's really good to hear that Edge improves accessibility, so maybe, you know, another
and
time.
And it's a good option aside from it.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to you, Tanis, about what you mean by that, because it's interesting to me. But personally, I love Chrome. I love my extensions. I found the Edge pop-up to be annoying, but if it is the case that it makes it more accessible, then that's great to hear.
Yeah, and it comes down to the fact that you said it's the contrast background and the screen readers work better with Edge than they do with Chrome, right?
Well, yeah, so like, When you go into like your appearance or whatever, you can set your computer. I set my computer for like a high contrast. So, you know, when you can turn your computer on, if you don't have like a background picture or whatever, like my screen will be black. So when I go into a web page, instead of it being, you know, white in the background and black typing, it's the opposite because it helps me see. Like
easier
to see it
the
other way around. Yeah, it's a lot easier for me to read like that. And if I do that in Chrome, I have to use kind of different extensions, and I have to turn it on individually for each page. So it's just more of a – I mean, it's just a little bit more convenient. It's just a little easier. I don't have to, you know, like set each individual website that I'm going to up that way.
All right, let's move on to our achievements then. Tanis, start us off.
All right, well, starting with Madhouse C, get 99 fishing on July 1st. Then we have Patchy XO, or Peachy XO, sorry. 99 room crafting on July 1st. And then Peachy XO with 99 dungeoneering on July 1st, one rib with 99 fire making on June 30th, Silly Cat with 98 with 99 herb lore. That was on June 30th, and Wang Quing with 120 dungeoneering on June 30th. Man, so close. I really wanted the Wang Chung, Shane.
All right.
Everybody went jump tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you could
have fun tonight.
Next up, we have Zero Kosov Zero with 120 farming on the 29th. Arendelle 20 with 99 smithing. Hey, I'm Zach with 99 defense. Luke Totodile with 120 slayer. Scarecrow with 99 archaeology. Dennis with 120 farming. And Minority with 99 archaeology on the 28th. Nicely done.
And also Rastafa with 200 million strength on the 27th of June. Also on the 27th, Rastafa with 120 prayer. The Lion got 120 construction on June 27th. Mike Strike 3, 99 prayer on June 26th. Swake with 200 mil defense on June 26th, and Shadow Raxia with 99 Mining on June 25th.
There's one more on the page break.
And, right, the Firewatch with 99 Archaeology. Nice. On June 25th.
Nicely done, everyone. Nice achievements all around.
Look at those, man. 200, 120s, 99s.
Amazing. Amazing work, everyone. All right. Let us move on to pick of the week. What do you got for us, David?
Yeah, so my pick of the week is the new Lady Gaga album, Chromatica. It's, you know, obviously it's a pop album, but I am enjoying it greatly and have found it to be her best work since, like, her first album, I think. I think it's my favorite album since the very first one with, like, Poker Face and Just Dance. And I just think a lot of the songs on it are really beautiful, and then some of the songs, like Sour Candy, have, like, fun synthy club beats. And then the other reason that it's special to me is that my aunt, who I was very, very close with, passed away last week. And her name's Alice, and one of the songs on the album is named Alice. And the last conversation that Alice and I had before she passed away was about the Lady Gaga song Alice on the album Chromatica. So it's going to be special for me for a really long time because of that.
That's a very, very effective pick of the week. I don't think we've ever had anything that hard hitting like that before. Thank you. All right. What have we been up to? Tanis, you want to start us off on this?
Yeah. I mean, working on the on that goal of 90 divination. That's on for the junior count. And I'm, you know, it's funny, we're talking about Tetracompass farming. I feel like I'm doing that, only I'm in the wrong band. I'm in the 83 to 86 level.
It'll get better.
Band. So, but I have been I have been getting random compass pieces. I didn't realize they were that rare. Like, I didn't realize
they're one out of 1,500.
Yeah, because I mean, I thought I was getting them with some regularity. So, I guess I just had a fortunate streak.
Yeah. And you know, once you start collecting all the colors and whatnot, it actually works out really well. And they're fun to just, you know, go, because they're kind of like a mini clue scroll in that way. You know, trying to find them in the world and whatnot. So, very good. As for me this week, working on Yak Track, I'm currently up to task 12, and you're probably saying, why is that so slow? Why is that so slow? Well, one of the things that I wanted to do with that, and one of the things that I did decide to do, is that for task 12, the potion task, I am making my own weapon poisons, and then I'm going to sell those. So that's going to be strict Herblore profit with that. The only thing I had to purchase was about 300 coconuts and the poison ivies. I had everything else from the pulp to the slime to make weapon poison +++.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
And I spent probably about 2 hours in the Scavid Cave collecting nightshade with my porters. So that is a cost too, but I made those myself as well. So I mean, it's a question of opportunity cost and whatnot. I'll probably still come out ahead on this. But
that's what you knew about that patch note last week or the week before. There was a patch note around that area, and I'm like, how did Shane?
Which was the patch note? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but it was in the area of that cave where you get that nightshade. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense now.
But aside from that, waiting for these archaeology tasks to return, because I enjoy those ones a lot. How about you, David? What about you?
Well, currently I'm working on archaeology on both my main and Iron Man. On my Iron Man, I'm trying to get 95 for Ancient Invention. And then on my main, I'm about 11 mil XP off finishing it up. And it's been really fun. And then I do a lot of skilling dailies. My daily skilling routine it's like an hour total in time and like 1.3 mil XP a day or something. So I do that in archaeology, basically. That's it. I haven't PVM'd in a while outside of the occasional Farrago trip.
Nice. I know one task everybody's looking at for the Yak Track, the ones that are annoying, or the Play RuneScape ones. I think the last Play RuneScape ones is, you know, you have to do 3 hours worth of activities getting XP, and it's just absolutely absurd on that. It's almost always better to do the alternate one, because it's not just, you know, play and be in the game. It's you have to play and be active for that many ticks, so... Lots of questions on that, but I mean, archaeology, I think, for you just seems to be the gift that keeps on giving, and it's just very, very encouraging to hear that all these months later after release. So, I like that.
Yeah, and it's been kind of cool to do archaeology on my Iron Man, because I obviously, you know, bought a lot of my materials leveling up, but with Iron Man, I can't buy any.
Yeah.
And also, I bought all my porters on my, well, I bought the energy and the diamonds, obviously you can't buy porters, but... I basically bought all my porters on my main, but on here I have to make them all myself. So it's been kind of cool seeing the skill where you're totally self-sufficient. And I have to say, I feel like they really balanced it beautifully. Obviously, it's slower, but it's still totally doable without any purchasing.
Archaeology is RuneScape done right.
Yes.
And on that note, I think that's it for this episode of RSBNB Updates. So if you guys, of course, want to join us in-game, you can find us at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. You can also subscribe to the podcast at any number of podcast listeners out there, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Stitcher, YouTube, pretty much anything. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you so much for joining us, David.
Thanks for having me.
See ya.